support the thing that you love and want to support. Support it. This message brought to you by 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
A fundraising free edition of Technology Bites. Also a Peter free edition right now because my computer's not started up yet.
Hooray. Well, on the plus side, everything is working except for Flicked's laptop. But that'll be fixed soon.
And we
have phones.
And we have a new light bulb.
I think your mic's not working, Groove.
Ow. Is it working
it's
now?
It's doing something.
I don't think so.
No.
Do that again.
No.
Will
you turn it down?
Pot him down. All right. So, okay, I misspoke. Not everything is working. We're still having problems. But that's okay because Technology Bites is not about polish or finesse. We're brute force. We're just a big, fat, old dictionary file being slammed against a password cache.
Take 10,000 of our shows, one will be done right.
Does anybody know if the wireless is working?
Seems to be.
But I'm on it.
I'm on it.
Elvis is on it.
But we still have the wired connection over there if you need it, I think. So you're going to test out your microphone there, Groove?
I think so.
All right, got it to work.
So they put everything back together after the lightning strike a week and a half ago?
I don't know if there's anything still broken in terms of that, but I know it seems that the phones are working, which is what, and we're broadcasting. So I think that's pretty much the important stuff. So welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Coming through loud and clear. All right. So, we're really glad that fundraiser is over. And we're really glad that everybody who stepped up and helped us make our goals. So we did really well. And I'm always happy to report that we did well during the fundraiser because, you know, it's something I have to hang on to because the next one is probably right around the corner. I don't know, next week or something.
Before you know it.
That's right. So if we everything goes well, we'll have Peter Hughes here with us in a bit, and we can do that. So let me give out the vital statistics on the radio program. Our website, if you want to visit that and learn more about the show, is geekradio.com, just like it sounds, geekradio.com or technologybytes.com. And you can also use the website to connect to IRC if you're interested, irc.cuckoo.com, or use the website to connect to that. What?
Can you, like, download files, listen to stuff on the website, too?
Yes.
Podcasts.
Legally?
Yes.
Can you right-click on photos on the website and put them up on your own website?
You can take our photos and steal them, and then if I catch you, I will issue a DMCA takedown notice on your ass. I'm Andy Warhol.
You know, after I saw that, I was just thinking, like, you know what? If I was thinking that, I would be like, every day I'm glad that you're not Andy Warhol, because I don't think I would want to be anywhere near Andy Warhol.
No. The reference is that I found this nest of vipers. I mean, this group of hip-hop DJs that have an internet radio broadcast, and I'm not really sure. I think they're out of Virginia or something, but anyway, they're these DJs, and one of the DJs, DJ YZ, had taken an image of mine. I was surprised they even found that this had been stolen, but he had found this image of mine, and he had turned it into a flyer for, you know, his DJ thing. So I found it on his website, and I came by and said, you know, oh, look, one of my images has been stolen. Thanks for stealing my image. And he came back with, you know, if you don't want people linking to your photos, you need to lock that stuff down. And I didn't steal it. It's available.
Don't make it available on the internet.
Right.
Get off the web.
And he said, and then he says, not like you're Andy Warhol or anything. So that sent me on a course of finding everywhere this image was being used by him, because not only on his website, but on their Facebook page and on some other MP3 download sites for his DJing.
Dang.
That picture was all over the place. So I coordinated an Andy Warhol-esque attack and issued DMCA takedown notices. And over the course of an 8-hour day, they all came down.
And you said,
I'm Andy Warhol,
bitch. You sent him a message and said, oops. Did I do that?
Or else you need to send him a take and alter the Campbell soup can thing to say whoop ass on it. And send it to him.
Andy Warhol brand soup and whoop ass.
Don't make me open this.
All right. So, yes, you can go to our website and you can ask nicely. You can use our images. I use my own images, but I always ask for my own permission when I do.
Can you take yourself down on command? If you had to?
If I had to, I'd issue myself a DMCA.
Do you work with yourself? Because I've kind of heard that you can...
I'm a little cantankerous. I've been known to deny.
I was going
to
say, sometimes you probably deny yourself just because you want to.
I dare myself to use my own images. Now, I've started using my own images in... I've used one of my own images in my Chronicle blog, and I actually credited myself.
And I noticed that. I thought, you didn't need to do that.
I asked myself for permission. Well, I didn't want to appear that I was just using an image, you know, that I just grabbed from somewhere. So I credited myself, and I linked back to my Flickr page. So it's all on the up and up. I mean, when I first saw that I'd done that, I wasn't really sure.
So we were talking before the show about the issue of Pinterest.
Pinterest. Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very Pinterest.
All right. So Pinterest, for our listeners at home, is a website, or it's a kind of a social media service where you can create a wall, and you can go, as you're browsing the web and you see stuff that you like, you can tag it and stick it on your Pinterest wall.
Like a bulletin board. You're putting a pin in it and sticking it up.
And it's interesting in that it is extremely, I think something like 97% of the heavy users of it, has 10 million users already, 97% of the heaviest users are women. It's very female-oriented.
And old, right?
Not necessarily. Well, define old. Not like my mother-in-law.
Like internet old.
Internet like, old, like, right, 30s. Like, 30s and
yeah. Later than 30s.
As old as
the best description I saw of Pinterest was on Twitter, and it said that it was like Reddit, but you replace all the atheists with recipes.
Exactly, and fashion pictures. So it's one of the things you do is you put this bookmarklet in your browser, you find something, you click it, and it pins it to a set of boards that you have, and it's very image-oriented, so the image shows up.
Like on a Facebook, when you put a link on Facebook to a website, it gives you usually the ability to scan through the images that are on that site and use that as the post.
Right.
And it displays that image. But on Pinterest, really all you see is like an image from
right.
the
it's
site.
Right. It's similar to Tumblr in that sense.
In that
it's very image-oriented. So the question becomes, if somebody sees something in Pinterest and pins it to their board... And, you know, there's the image that you have the rights to, and that they pinned it because they liked it. And there are links back to the original source, but they're only in one place. When you're looking on the total collection of images on somebody's board, and there are different boards within each page, then there you can see a link. But if you go and look at the image itself, it doesn't link back to the original source material.
And they're moving the data files off of the original server, and they're actually making a copy somewhere.
They make a copy, so but when you click on the image itself, it will bring up the full image on the other site, but not the surrounding material.
But they have lifted a copy of the file, and they're serving it somewhere that's not your own server.
Yes.
So
if you removed it or if you changed it,
it
would still be the original version.
So I get that, but at the same time, I think it'd be a cool hyperlinking tool. I don't dig the deal that they're actually taking data and making copies and putting it out there. Because once it's out of your control, you know, you're in Jay's situation. So
I just did a search on Pinterest Bald Heretic, which is my Flickr site, and sure enough, on Pinterest there is a Lori Elliott who has created a wall called Galveston, Old Galveston, and there are two of my images linked on her site. And what's funny is that it gives the source as google.com.
So in other words, she found it by Googling for it, I would assume.
I'm wondering if she found it from a Google image search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you click on the image, and there's nothing to indicate where it came from, except the name of the photo, which is what I named. This one was the old hotel on the pier, and I titled it Post Ike.
The Admiral or something?
Yeah. So when you click on the image itself, it takes you to Google IMGHP. So it takes you back to Google image search. So it doesn't even link back to where the photo came from or anything. So she's able to use, this person was able to use Pinterest. She found that image. She liked it. She created a gallery for Galveston. She's got two of my images in there. Now, she's not making any money off of it, but Pinterest conceivably down the road is going to find a way to make money off of their site. So yeah, that brings up an interesting question. So perhaps tomorrow I'll start contacting Pinterest's upstream provider as well as their contact for copyrighted images and see what happens. That seems to me like it would be a really just an involved tail chase, but I don't know.
I don't. You know, the thing is that Pinterest is an indication that somebody likes what you have.
Right.
It's essentially an endorsement. It doesn't broadcast it. It's not like Twitter where it takes what you have and sends it out. It essentially has a collection that says, these are the things I like. And they can, if presuming that it links to your source material as opposed to, say, the Google thing
right.
that you...
And you're right. The image itself is hosted on the Pinterest servers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So they've cached a copy of it. It is lost as to where that image came from, so somebody else could come along and find it on Pinterest and take it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, although there is a way to find it, if you go to the page, in other words, they've set up a collection, things I like, places I've been, that kind of thing, and you'll see a bunch of different images there, and there might be a link to the original. The other thing is once Pinterest will show you all of the images from a particular domain. So I went in and I could find all of the images that had been pulled from blog.cron.com.
How do you find that?
That is on, if you open up any particular image in Pinterest, where it's framed and you see it enlarged and you look down the page, it'll say all images from, and then it'll show the domain it came from.
So, I wonder if Pinterest will now go down in flames due to my obsessive compulsive disorder. All right, pinned via pin market from Google.com, so you can click on Google. See, that kills me because they're crediting Google.com with the image.
Right.
So I can actually use Pinterest.com/source and then /domain name. So yeah, there's two of my images from baldheretic.com on Pinterest. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I'll spend the rest of the show making that determination.
Well, and again, how do you feel when somebody likes something that you have on Facebook and adds it to their Facebook?
But they're not, by doing that, though, they're just, it's a link. That's my thing. It's like a relative link. You're not actually taking the data. It's a reference back to a source material, and it's, you know, some metadata
that's
added
the ones
to that.
That's the ones that you know about. I mean, there are certainly people that might right-click, save the image, and upload it to Facebook for their own, you know, with no credit back.
I think maybe it just fills a void. Maybe it means that Facebook doesn't have a good way just to throw up quick pictures with references back, because it throws in all the other junk.
Have you looked for pictures on Tumblr?
Yeah, I've seen some of my stuff show
and
up.
And what do you do with Tumblr?
I haven't done anything with Tumblr yet, because my main concern is right now has been focused on people that are making money off of
right.
it. And, you know, I guess in that situation, Tumblr or Pinterest or even Facebook, they could be making money off.
Well, hipsters don't make money, so Tumblr's safe.
Right now, Pinterest doesn't have any ads on it. And I don't recall if Tumblr does ads on individual blog posts. But at the moment, Pinterest does not. So nobody's making any money off Pinterest for now. It's simply people saying, I like this. And to a certain extent, you know, do you want to be the Bigfoot in that case? You know, I mean, that's kind of what you have to decide. I think a lot of media companies are leaving it alone because, you know, it's essentially saying we like the content that these people are producing. So,
right. Well, that can take you down a slippery path anyway, because all the images that people are viewing of yours are downloaded to their computer. So what a site like Pinterest is trying to do is allow people to say, I'm browsing the web and this is what I found interesting.
Right.
But I think Pinterest might, you know, at least in this case, you know, other sites, you know, notwithstanding, Pinterest has a duty to make it where that content can be traced back to the owner.
There needs to be more obvious links on Pinterest back to the original content.
Because even Google has, and we were talking about this before the show, when you do an image search on Google, when you click on the image, once you find it, it pops it up in a window, but above the site that it's found from. So once you click that image, it drops you into the site where the image came from. And you go, oh, okay, well, this came from Jay Lee, or this came from The Chronicle, or whatever. In this case, it doesn't do that. I mean, on the plus side, you're not, by them, you know, there is a plus by them hosting the image on their site, in that it does not drive, you know, if somebody's got a particularly popular Pinterest site, it doesn't drive unnecessary bandwidth to your server. So there's a plus there, in a way. But yeah, it could be a whole new interesting question. All right. So as I was saying earlier, before we got off on this tangent, geekradio.com is our website. IRC is where we hang out on Tech Bytes, and irc.cuckoo.com. You can use your own client, or you can join via the website. You can use the website to contact us. We'll try to answer questions that come in from there, either on the show or during the week. And the phone number, which you'll need a little bit later on, is 713-526-5738. That's the number to call to be on the air. We're not asking for money right now. We made our goal during the past 3 weeks.
Yay.
So we're very happy about that. We get on to regular programming. So now that we have Peter Hughes all queued up and ready to go, we're going to go to San Antonio for the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, and so to start out, I want to show you all this picture that I got, and it's sponsored by... In other stories of technology gone awry, you know, you may have heard about the Apple app that would upload your address book to your address book to their server. And the answer that's come down from Apple is kind of unsatisfying. The statement they gave to CNET said, apps that collect or transmit a user's contact data without their prior permission are in violation of our guidelines. We're working to make this even better for our customers, and as we've done with location services, any app wishing to access contact data will require explicit user approval in a future software release. So that's good, but yeah, the honor system maybe wasn't such a great idea for, they try to keep the app environment clean and, you know, so that it's not awash in people who are, say, trying to steal your address book to use it to, I don't know, build spam lists or whatever. But it's unfortunate. And, you know, they're addressing it, so that's good, but it, you know, this is one of those where maybe it would have made sense to look a little farther down the road and look a little ahead and say maybe permission, you know, when it starts wholesale handing your data off, that maybe that's something that you should secure a little bit besides with a EULA. That's, you know, because we all know how important those deals where you check the box that says you agreed all the terms and conditions and that you'll follow all their rules. Yeah, that's very effective. I'll throw all the bad news in the we'll go from bad news to sad news to caffeine to the future. How's that for a nice arc for the news? Google says it's fixed a wallet security flaw that potentially allowed a phone thief to spend a user's prepaid balance. The ability to provision new prepaid cards had been suspended pending the update, but has now been restored. It's not all the way back to normal in Big G's world of mobile money, however. Users still find themselves caught between two competing arguments over an entirely different vulnerability, which involves a brute force attack on rooted devices. Google insists it isn't a major concern as long as wallet users refrain from rooting their systems, and that the system still, quote, offers advantages over the plastic cards and folded wallets in use today. On the other hand, the company that discovered this issue, Zvelo, has come back at Google with an equally blunt response. It acknowledges that a handset must be rooted to be vulnerable, but crucially, its researchers also say that a device doesn't have to be rooted before it's stolen. So, you know, the problem is if a thief takes it, they could root the phone themselves, and then wallet would be wide open for them. Zvelo, the company that discovered the issue, said they won't be happy with wallet until it requires a longer PIN number. So with all this drama, one of the things to know is that there's no evidence that anyone has yet managed to exploit those weaknesses and get any money or take them take money from someone else. And now the sad one, little melancholy, but it's not local, so there's that, you know, so you can feel a little better. NASA has shut down its last mainframe. They are out of the mainframe business. the mainframe was located at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. The massive 6-year-old 2094 S54 model was an IBM Z9 system. Has 54 main processors and 512 gigs of memory. According to Wikipedia, an S54 mainframe cost millions of dollars when new. NASA CIO Linda Cureton wrote in a blog post that the shutdown of the Z9 ends the mainframe era at NASA. She noted that mainframes still have their place in computing, where it does not matter if end user interfaces are clunky and somewhat inflexible. That's a quote. When there's a need for a system that delivers, quote, extremely reliable, secure, transaction-oriented business applications. According to Cureton, NASA kept the Z9 operational for older applications that are now being phased out and replaced with iPhone apps. Nah, I'm kidding. NASA apparently has not developed mainframe applications in some time, which made it a rather costly proposition to keep it up. Cureton also noted that NASA can save money by shutting down some software licenses that are tied to that system, which runs Red Hat Linux. The first mainframe, so here's just so you can bookend the era, is the first mainframe, IBM mainframe, was a 360-91 model, which shipped to them in 1967, and so then the last one was to 2011, so... Just kind of think about what the, you know, map that one up against the kind of personal computer and computing world, the history as it's gone along. When someplace like even NASA doesn't, when a mainframe is not necessary, that's kind of a wild concept. That's one of those futuristic mind benders that just quietly goes by and nobody notices it except some of us geeks. Now to caffeine. If you want to manage your caffeination level, Pennsylvania State University developed an app called Caffeine Zone, which will determine how much caffeine is coursing through your bloodstream at any given time. It's a free app. In building the Caffeine Zone app, professors representing several disciplines relied on peer-reviewed studies to devise a simple formula. The idea they chose is that if you have between 200 and 400 milligrams of caffeine in your bloodstream, you're in the optimal mental alertness zone, while anyone above 100 milligrams has entered the good luck sleeping anytime soon zone. Many people don't understand how caffeine levels in the bloodstream go up and how they go down, said Frank Ritter, himself a professor of so many things that he may have devised this app for his own sake. He's in information sciences and technology, psychology, and computer science and engineering. Let's see. So it's available for the iOS devices, iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. The users have to do the heavy lifting. You have to manually input how much caffeine you've consumed, how much you plan to drink next, as well as when and how quickly you're going to drink it. Based on this data, the app advises whether and how much the user should drink. So now you can have a new reason to stand around and diddle around while you're looking at and trying to figure out how to say medium in Starbucks talk. You've got a whole new thing to do to occupy your time standing there at the front of the line because nobody's going to do it while they're waiting. They're going to wait until they're standing in front of the cashier and use that to extend their time even further. But it is a free app, and it could, you know, for those of you who need help managing your caffeine levels to keep them keep them optimal, then maybe this will help you if you're on iOS devices. And finally, speaking of iOS devices, well, it wouldn't be an info shot without an Apple rumor. And here's another Apple thing. As I look for stories for the news, the Apple ones seem to be kind of all over the place. And I try to find non-Apple stories to put in the news, not from a just to make sure that it's just not that I'm not over focused and that the sources I'm getting news from aren't too Apple centric and so on. But one story, and this is another Apple one, but apparently on the like S&P 500, the people who are doing the economists who are doing stuff on that, you know, Apple this past week became, you know, the most valuable company around, and its share price went to like $500 a share, all this kind of stuff that we don't normally care about. But the thing is, so that as the biggest company in the country, the S&P 500, when they use the numbers for the stock prices and stuff for the S&P 500 to do projections and all of that, Apple was distorting what the economy looked like because it's doing so well. So in a sense, Apple has gotten so big that they're kind of have their own gravity, and they were pulling on what the numbers meant to the point where essentially they're ignoring the people who are trying to figure out what the stock market is doing are ignoring Apple because it makes everything look too good, which that's just bizarre to me. But I guess it's a product of being so essentially such a huge company now, as far as their valuation and so on. But in other news, you got to have an iPhone rumor or an iPad rumor. iPad, I guess, is the hot one because that's the next up, likely next up as far as having an announcement. The Wall Street Journal, which seems to have, spills a lot of Apple rumors, oddly enough. Excuse me. They've gone ahead and called it on LTE support being included in the next iPad. So thinking that they're claiming that AT&T and Verizon will carry a 4G-capable iPad device. The publication cites the usual, quote, people familiar with the matter, unquote, noting once again that the next-gen iPad, currently dubbed the iPad 3 by the rumor mills, and every time I say it, KD5 shudders visibly and says there is no iPad 3, which I'll share this from the Geek Gathering very quickly. Okay, so let's count the iPads. His is the iPhone 5. I'm sorry. I'm going down the wrong path. Bad me. So the iPad 3 is the third one. The iPhone 5, we'll do that one when there's an iPhone 5 rumor again. I'll tell you the KD5 thing. Anyways, the rumor mills dub it iPad 3. Of course, it could be an iPad 2S if Apple follows the phone thing. It's expected to be announced the first week of March, so that's coming up. Meanwhile, in a separate report, the journal claims Apple is actively testing an 8-inch version of the iPad. The LTE support being in the iPad isn't new. One of the positives to that is on a phone, LTE is a battery suck. It just pulls the life of the device way down for a small thing like a phone. But on a tablet, there's enough room to get some battery life in there where you could use the higher speed. Obviously, it's much more of a surfing device or a data device. You get the higher speed, plus you can have a battery life that's legitimate. Tim Cook has listed the downsides of adding LTE to Apple devices in the past, claiming that battery life and chip size trade-offs weren't worth it. But that could change now. There are new Qualcomm chips expected to be integrated into iOS devices this year. As far as the 8-inch iPad in testing, the journal claims it would have a similar screen resolution to the current iPad 2. Citing officials at some of Apple's suppliers, the publication does note that Apple often tests new designs with its suppliers and may not choose to make it if it decides the costs are too high or the market segment isn't worth chasing. Again, Cook has repeatedly said during Apple's fiscal calls that he believes the current iPad form factor is the most ideal, so it would seem unlikely that Apple would dive into that market now. It's tough to know. They note in this article that Steve Jobs made a habit of talking trash about certain products just before rolling out an Apple version, but I don't know. I would think that an iPad Mini, that didn't sound like a thing that Steve was real into, and I would be surprised if the first iPad released after he's no longer around would be something that was that different than what they were already doing. That's just my guess. I don't have any secret insight or sources who are familiar with the matter, but that's my guess. And that also is the news.
All right. An iPad Mini, isn't that the iPhone?
Well, you could see where something a little bit bigger. I mean, when I took my Newton out, when I was looking at old tech for the 10th anniversary Geek Gathering, that size screen and form factor for, like, business use or for having information when you're kind of more on the go, it is a useful size. It could have value.
Although, at least in terms of the 7-inch.
Yeah, I was going to say, the streak.
Right. The 7-inch, Apple executives had pretty much said they didn't like that form factor for it. Of course, Steve Jobs is no longer around. But, 8 just seems almost like an odd size. It's too big to put in your pocket. And it's not that much smaller than the 10-inch. So that seems almost like an odd size. Apple's always prototyping things. I'm not sure that I buy that would ever see the light of day. Might, but I doubt it.
I think like a 7-inch iPad with a phone.
Yeah, you want that big-ass phone, don't you?
I want
you
a phone and my tablet.
The 17-inch iPad in your tablet. With a phone.
Skype's not a phone in your tablet because it can't answer. You know, it needs to be a phone. A phone.
Two-way.
Two-way. Yeah, it needs to be a phone. There will be an iPad with a phone.
I don't think
it could be like some of those rumors they had for the iMac, though, where you have this, like, giant iPad that you, like, dock the little phone device, like, docks inside it. So then you, like, make it spit it out like a videotape and then use the phone part.
Perhaps.
It could happen.
I think of an iPad where the brains is a phone, you know, and you just plug your phone into the iPad or into a tablet, turns it into a tablet device, and you could make calls from it if you wanted to. And then you just take the phone out. That's where all the computer chip is anyway. All the iPad is an extended...
So you want the Motorola Atrix is what you want.
In Apple form.
Apple see, Atrix. But that's too complex. That adds a layer of complexity.
I honestly think that an iPad could be made to have cellular phone capabilities with just the tiniest little bit of technology added to it.
Oh, it could, but I don't think you and about three other people are probably the only people who want something like that.
I don't think so.
Because you can do it with Skype.
No, I want my cell phone. I would like to be able to, if I'm on the iPad, why do I have to fish out my phone? Why can't it just answer the call, receive the call?
But then you're forced to take it probably in either have to put your headphones in it or take it as a...
Or you could have a phone that has a SIM plug-in for the phone chip. So you could plug it into your phone when you're wanting to use your phone. You take the chip out and you plug it into your iPad and then it will make calls.
They should make it a Bluetooth device like your car. Like, you know, you associate with your iPad. You can take and make... You know, make and place phone calls over the iPad. Because I do like the idea of being able to do it. If you've got that in your hand, you shouldn't have to go for a phone.
Right, I shouldn't have to put that down because, you know, putting the iPad down is kind of a pain because it doesn't have, like, you know, a prop-up feature or whatever unless you buy something additional for it. But if you have the iPad and you're just chilling out with your iPad and you're doing that and your phone rings, at least, yes, an app that would pair it to your phone so you could answer it on the iPad.
I mean, no, I like that. I like right where it automatically knows the phone's ringing. Mm-hmm. You have your iPad there,
and it alerts you on the iPad. You press a button,
and it answers
like
it.
FaceTime.
Oh,
Tim
used to do that with like Sony Ericsson phones with Bluetooth. You could actually click and answer your phone on your laptop after you paired it, which was really cool. And it just kind of went away. And yeah, I just didn't really notice that it went away. But that is a neat app. And you could even like dial your phone from your calendar, so you make
yeah.
A now click
see
and
that's
the phone goes.
That's Apple like.
That yeah, that would be okay. So that's my Apple idea. But
there you go.
Regardless, you know, having that ability, and certainly, I don't want my. You know, I agree. I don't want my iPad to be my phone. But really, I would probably make more phone calls on my iPad than I do on my current phone.
That's one thing that's sort of odd about Apple, though, is they don't seem to go for that kind of cross device type stuff in ways that other companies seem to.
They want you to buy both devices.
But there I think may be that it may also be about complexity too.
You should be able to pair your phone to the iPad through Bluetooth. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the same way you do to your car or to a headset.
You heard it here on Tech Bytes first. So when
it happens,
that, we get royalty.
Okay, so Dwight and I have found a compromise because mm-hmm. I was saying it will probably be in the phone, but this is actually a better idea, and it's more modular or more, you know, you don't have to have it.
Work with any phone, really.
Could pair my iPad to my TV and use my iPad as a remote control, there's no reason why I can't pair it to the phone.
There's some speculation that I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, Patrick Moorhead, who's an analyst, used to be with AMD, that if you wanted to do the Apple TV right, the issue of talking to the TV when it's across the room would be difficult, but what if the microphone system was in your phone that was sitting next to you, or in the iPad that was sitting next to you,
or even in your Mac,
so that, in fact, Apple could turn on all the microphones in the room when you have your television set on, and it would triangulate where you are and better handle voice control for your television.
So that would make sense.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I hate yelling at my Xbox.
Yeah, you have to really kind of yell and speak clearly in order for the Kinect to hear you.
Right. So there should be an ability for me to talk to something localized, you know, the remote control or something.
Right. Or even if your phone is just next to you, you just tap it and go, hey, yo. You know.
Now I want to be able to make phone calls from my Xbox, which I probably can.
I'd like to see that Kinect technology get adapted to, you know, PCs everywhere, because and not improved any, because I just would love to go into somebody's offices and everybody's shouting at their computers and jumping around behind their desk to try and make it, open a file.
I think that UVerse, if you have the UVerse phone and television and internet system, I think you can answer UVerse phone calls on your television set. I don't have all of it. So.
My grandfather had a Zenith television that would do that, you know, back in like 1983 or something.
Right. You plug the cord into the TV set, right?
And then when it rang, it would show on the screen like the phone number that was calling, and you could choose to answer it or not through the television.
Does anybody have the wireless box for UVerse? The set-top box?
Not the wireless one. I have a wired set-top
box. I'm curious about the wireless and how much... They talk about when you order UVerse, ask the technician when he installs it about... They don't tell you whether it costs anything extra or not.
The problem with UVerse and wireless is that it's 802.11G on their router. It still is. They still have not started.
But what about the set-top boxes that are wireless?
They all talk to the router.
Oh.
That's they bring into your
home. So you're thinking over that you couldn't stream HD?
I imagine it's probably not an HD signal. And even, you know, 54 megabits is relatively good if you can get that full amount, but there are other things that in 802.11n that aren't in G that benefit media.
And it's a really, really compressed HD image.
Yeah. Well, UVerse already is compressed.
I like the idea of being able to have the TV anywhere you want rather than slave to a wall jack of some kind. 713-526-5738 if you want to get in on the conversation or... You know, derail it by asking us a question about anything else technology related. We have the calls lines are working, open, ready to receive calls. Groovehouse is standing by to screen you and make sure that you're suitable for on-air presence. 713-526-5738.
I dare you to make me stop playing solitaire.
See, he double dog dares you. So, yeah, make Groovehouse stop playing solitaire.
Ask me why I'm playing solitaire.
Make Groovehouse stop playing with himself. All right, so why are you playing solitaire?
No internet.
Dwight, you don't have your Mac out, so you can't share out your internet.
Well, no, but I have the MiFi is working.
Oh, the MiFi. Well, maybe Groovehouse when he gets through screening that.
Yeah, I'm actually on the MiFi.
You are?
Actually, it may be full in terms of users. It has a limit.
Okay. All right, so we got some calls coming in, so you know we'll be prepared to talk to our listeners. It's so good not to be in fundraiser, I have to say. It's like a big burden that's been lifted from my shoulders.
So for now.
I'm looking... For now?
For now.
Like another fundraiser's coming?
They're always coming.
Or more burdens of a... Are you the burdener?
The burdener.
The burdener.
I am overburdened.
All right, so Groovehouse.
Yes.
What do we have?
We have one, you suck, and we have, that was the caller on line two. She said, you suck.
All of us
and then
together?
She hung up. I think she was talking to me.
Collectively, or was it for you?
I think it was just for me.
It was a female who said you suck?
It sounded like it. And then look, they're calling back again. Great.
Because they want to clarify who sucks.
It's just me. It's just you suck. Yeah. And then we got line one, and we're gonna
He did ask if they could hold, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, who do we have first?
All right, up first, we're going to take Bill.
Hey, Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks. I downloaded a new version of Firefox, and on the old version, I could easily right-click and download copies of a video from YouTube if I wanted to, but on this one, I can't. You know, it's probably some silly noob question, but maybe you guys know the answer to it.
Well, Firefox, by its very nature, does not have the ability to download a YouTube video. There is a plugin that allows you to download YouTube content to Firefox, and it may be that the you need to update that plugin.
Yeah, if you were going from like 3.6 or even like an 8 up to 10.0, okay, a lot of the plugins broke, so you'll want to go and probably just Google for another like YouTube download plugin Firefox 10.
Yeah,
because it's so new, a lot of the extensions, a lot of the plugins just don't work. So you probably missed the screen. There's probably a screen on the first run that says, "Hey, these don't work. You know, do you want to disable? What do you want to do?" And you probably just blew right by it.
Yeah, I probably did.
Yeah, so it's not something that's native to Firefox. It's something that you would have had to install, or somebody that helped you out had to install for you.
Okay, I found it then.
You did?
Yep. Went to Google while you were explaining it to me.
Well, that's the way to do it.
God bless the Google.
God bless the Google.
Oh, hey, and y'all gave me some good advice a few months ago that really worked on getting a virus out of my computer, which was to create a new user that didn't have admin privileges, and then using that to surf the internet to find the anti-spyware that I needed to download.
And that helped out. Well, good. Thanks for letting us know.
Sure, it worked.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, have a good night.
How you do?
Hey, Groovehouse.
He's still being told,
hey, Groovehouse,
uh-huh,
you suck.
Oh, hey. Yeah, I got no internet, so I suck.
Well, you can share off this Wi-Fi,
okay,
maybe.
Yeah, in a second. I got to get passwords.
We don't want to. We hate to see you wanting for internet.
Oh, I'm just going to play solitaire. I haven't played in forever.
Comment. Yeah, caller called in and said that the Uverse box allows caller ID on the TV,
but may not allow you to answer it.
Right. Yeah, he's aware of that. This user was aware of.
Yeah. Well, at least tells you, you know, whether or not you want to get up or not,
or reach over and
well, you know, uncross your leg and find out that your foot fell asleep and stumble to the phone. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thank you, guys. Years ago, when I was migrating from Fortran to something like Visual Basic, I remember there was this property called the focus, so that a program could grab the focus, which meant that, you know, it was like the center of attention, or like if you're typing. Anyway, that's something that, you know, programs do in, for instance, Windows.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is there like a registry key or something that I can say, that I can set, that'll say nobody can grab the focus away from whoever has it, so that if I'm typing into, like, say, my password, some other program can't pop up something and grab half of what I was typing.
Speaking from being working in VB way back when, that's not going to be focus. That's going to be a .NET property called always on top. And that's what you want, because focus is an event that's received. You can set the focus, but focus is usually something that is triggered when someone clicks or moves the focus to a particular window. Okay. What you want to look for is the always on top property. I'm not sure if you can set
that's
that.
That's when you're programming, but I think what the caller, and correct me if I misheard you, you're talking about like you open up a web page or something and you start to type something in, and another program launches for whatever reason and jumps in front of that.
Yeah, I want a global no, you may not get the focus away from another program.
Well, do you know what's causing that for you?
Oh, everything. Whoever wrote the program thinks that their program is going to be the only one that's ever being run.
What operating system?
What I want it to do is, you know, sit in the little menu bar and flash saying, I need some attention, or, you know, how on Macs, how little icons will hop up and down on the task.
What specific program is doing this to you? Is it one that you wrote?
Generally, it's like if I'm typing in a web page, but you know, it doesn't matter. You know, if I'm typing into Word, whenever I'm typing into one program and some other program.
Give me an example of the other program that's jumping up, because I don't see that in my Windows environment unless I try to open applications up when my computer's first booting. I get a number of login screens for my email or for my voicemail and so forth, and those will come to the front as the computer's starting up. But once the computer's fully booted, and running, if I'm in Word, it does not throw up another page or something. Go ahead.
I thought, what version?
McAfee will do that. Oh, we just
what version of Windows?
Ourselves.
Oh, you're talking about, okay.
What version of Windows?
That's just one example.
I found a solution for you.
Communicator will grab, you know, that's...
So will AIM. Yeah. AIM is notorious for
it,
you.
It's a programming thing. So what version of Windows are you wanting to do this with? XP or 7?
Right now, I'm mostly running XP.
Okay, there's a program. It's called Always On Top Maker. So you can go download it from fadsoft.net, and what it does is it puts that flag on that program, and you can set it to always be on top. If you're just talking about, like, if you just want kiosk mode with Firefox, there's actually a plugin called Always On Top for Firefox, and it'll just keep Firefox on top.
The main ones I would want to do, I would want to set that for, say, Word, whatever web browsers I use, probably Excel.
Yeah, go Google for Always On Top Maker. And you're going to want to set topmost properties, but what you can do is you can flag different windows. It'll put that property on whatever program you point it to, and it'll keep it up at the forefront.
Always On Top Maker. Thanks, guys.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, AIM.
I don't have that problem in Windows 7. Windows 7 is really good about just flashing in the taskbar, or you know, that this program wants my attention, but it doesn't throw stuff up in front of, you know, taking over. At least in Windows 7, I've noticed.
I'm using Windows 7 at work, and I have AIM. And AIM will frequently, particularly if a chat window in AIM is already, like, on top on another monitor or elsewhere on the screen, and I'm writing in something else, when somebody comes in and
you'll type your
that
password right into your chat.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I've seen what he's talking about, and in a lot of apps that do that, you could often go into the app. I think you may be able to go into AIM, and there may be a checkbox in the setting that turns that feature off.
It also might be that if you minimize the windows, that they would only flash down there. They wouldn't pop up again.
Right.
All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse is relegated to playing solitaire and needs your distractions. But don't call to tell him he sucks.
He knows that already.
He already knows.
Well, no, Groovehouse does not suck. Groovehouse is pretty cool. We like Groovehouse.
We're going to make him blush. No, maybe not. He's just kind of, he's like touching his, he's going, All right, so what's up?
All right, yeah, we got a couple calls.
We do?
We do.
People that have interrupted you?
They have. They've stopped my game of solitaire.
You up on your dare.
They did. And we have one calling in, too, so if you're calling in, keep calling. I'm going to get you here in just a second.
All right, who do we have?
All right, up next, we're going to take a call from Andres.
Andres, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I was wondering how I can use my cell phone as an internet hub for my computer.
Well, a lot of cell phones will allow you to use what's called turn your phone into a hotspot, a Wi-Fi hotspot. You'd have to have wireless added to your desktop computer to be able to use that.
So I can pretty much piggyback off my cell phone 3G.
You can, but there's a fee involved in that. Usually the providers make you pay extra to enable the hotspot feature of your phone.
And, you know, cell phone networks have data limits that are fairly low. And if you're using it as your main source of internet access for desktop computers at home, you stand a real good chance of blowing through that limit pretty quickly. It can get really expensive, or it can get you throttled. And you would end up with a much slower connection. It's not really practical.
Okay. And just a comment, I heard y'all talking about the iPad with the TV, and I have a little Android tablet, the no-name, real cheap one, but it came with an HDMI cord, and what I can do is go on the internet, and I can watch, Netflix on my tablet, and I can hook up the HDMI into my computer and essentially have
all the porn you can stand. All right, well, thanks for that bit of information, and enjoy your red box. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air with us. We got about 6 minutes until the top of the hour, at which time we'll have to take a short break. But I think we could squeeze another call or two in before then. 713-526-5738. Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to take Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes. Oh, okay. Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me? Okay. Listen, I'm on the line right now. I have... done. I'm sorry. I downloaded the latest version of Google, and every time I try to do a query, I get this this little... You know that little thing with the squiggly letters on it that they want you to type it in, and it tells me that they need for me to put that in there.
A CAPTCHA, yeah.
What is that all about?
Well, if you go to some websites and you you try to put in data, type in information on the website or post something to it, they want to know you're a person. So they throw up this CAPTCHA that says, here, you type what you see here, and we'll let you do what you want to do.
Okay, that only happens on one of my computers.
Does it happen with every site you go to?
No, it just happened on Firefox. Firefox will not let me go beyond, but it doesn't do it all the time. It just do it occasionally.
I'm really not following what's going on here. If you let up Firefox and you go to www.kpft.org.
No, I'm doing it from the Google search on Firefox.
You're getting it when you search?
Yes.
That is Google sometimes looks at specific machines and thinks that they are bots. I've seen that before.
So it may be a sign that your computer has a virus or spyware on it.
There's an issue. There's something about... Do you have a Google account?
No. I just use Firefox to search. I don't do no great big whole lot of important stuff. You know, I just might need to look up something. Let me tell you what brought all this about. This client service for NetWare, I'm pretty sure you've had that discussion. I haven't been online with you guys for a while. That changes your welcome screen to where you have to get the things from the old school.
Yeah, a client for NetWare is a NetWare overlay for Windows that allows you to log into a NetWare network.
Okay, all right then. Well, I went online and I found out how to delete that.
Okay.
Okay, so I deleted it. I just went, you know the routine.
Right, you got to add a new program to get rid of it.
All this started after I deleted it. Now, here's the deal. I was able to delete it on one of my computers, on the computer that's connected directly to the router. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, this same thing happens to a computer in a other room that's wireless, and I cannot get it off of that thing for nothing.
So you still have the NetWare login on that other computer?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm finding some things online. Google says that a CAPTCHA can be triggered by...
That's not what he's experiencing now. He's moved on from that.
Okay.
So what he's talking about now is he's got a computer that when you try to log into it, it gives a NetWare login.
Well, and that can be causing his problem. It looks like it's coming from a proxy. And when Google sees a search coming from a proxy, it will throw up a CAPTCHA.
Okay.
And I bet that's his problem.
Well, you're going to have to keep researching to see how you can get rid of it. I think that, let me see. I'm going to have to take a break here and go. We have to do a station business here. But I would keep researching how to remove that NetWare login from that computer. So try some Google searches that say remove NetWare login and see if you
can. I did everything. That's how I found out to remove it off of the main computer. I tried everything that I saw in there. The problem is on the wireless computer.
I tell you what, we can put you on hold.
I'll call back.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Sure. All right. Well, we need to take a short break here and take care of some station business. So you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. He's Peter Hughes.
I think Peter Hughes just dropped.
Yep. He's Flicked. He's Barrett. He's Dwight. He's Groovehouse.
That's right.
We're all here.
Who's Peter?
Hello. Sorry. Yeah, my Skype fell off.
We had just about time that to where we could actually break in a minute, too. What do you want to do, right at the hour?
That's fine.
Okay. So I have to kill another 25 seconds now.
We're already over.
Yeah, we were supposed to go at 58, so it's fine.
All right. Well, that's what I tried to do, but we didn't make it. So anyway, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
Dwight. You're Dwight?
And we'll be right back after this.
Lo que está escuchando no es su típica estación. Usted está escuchando Pacifica Radio. Estaciones en todos los Estados Unidos como esta dan una gran alternativa para escuchar. Aquí usted encontrará música como no otra, noticias y programación local. Pero nosotros damos mucho más que esto. Nosotros aceptamos personas de todas edades, culturas, para que participen y sean parte de nuestra estación. Nosotros entrenamos nuevos voluntarios para que sirvan la comunidad y sean parte de ella por medio de este. Unas veces por año, estaciones de la comunidad piden su ayuda. Sus contribuciones nos continuarán a ayudar a pertenecer vivamente para los años que vienen. Pero no necesita que esperar. Puede hablarnos a cualquier hora y poner su contribución. Gracias por escuchar. Y no se olvide que usted hace este tipo de estación posible. Este mensaje es de parte de Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
All right, we're back with Technology Bites, and now it's time for Barrett Time.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. We survived yet another pledge drive without losing a single member to fundraiser flu, which means we're back with a little Barrett Time trivia. You guys ready? What actor or actress do all these television shows have in common? So we're looking for the actor or actress that all of these television shows have in common.
Don Knotts.
Yes. Whoa. That's, okay. And that's it for Barrett Time. Howdy Doody, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Twilight Zone, 77 Sunset Strip, Route 66, The Outer Limits, The Reporter, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Fugitive, Hawaii 5-0, Columbo, and Third Rock from the Sun.
Rod Serling.
No. How about if I add in Boston Legal?
Oh, Shatner. William Shatner.
Yeah, the gimme was T.J. Hooker, and if we needed it, the ringer would have been Star Trek.
I was going to say Shatner because of the Twilight Zone and the Outer Limits.
So, of course, you know, we're talking about Bill, a.k.a. Billy, a.k.a. The Shat, a.k.a. I didn't make that up.
Really?
I had some concerns about saying that on air, but I think we're good on this. That's actually what he goes by. A.k.a. William Allen Shatner. Will Wheaton, the actor who played Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation, had an early experience with Shatner. Upon their first meeting, William refused to shake Will's hand. Wheaton said he explained what his character did on the Enterprise-D, and all Shatner could tell him was, "I'd never let a kid come onto my bridge. I can't do a Shatner thing." But he said he'd never let a kid come onto his bridge, and he walked away. Wheaton writes, Captain James Tiberius Kirk of the starship Enterprise 1701 and Enterprise 1701A, the only person in Starfleet to ever defeat the Kobayashi Maru, the man behind the Corbomite maneuver, the man who took the Enterprise to the Genesis planet to return Spock's Katra, the man who I once admired since I was 8 years old, was immediately transformed into William Effing Shatner. Of course, that's been cleaned up for radio. Regardless of how you feel about the good captain, he'll be in Houston on March 23rd.
Dwight can't operate his computer.
So regardless of how you feel about the good captain, he'll be in Houston on March 23rd at Jones Hall for a speaking engagement. Called Shatner's World, the one-man show may not be all Trek, but it's definitely a shot to see the legend locally. The show opened yesterday on Broadway with the tagline, "It's Shatner's World, we just live in it." If you can't wait until March to scratch your Star Trek itch, look no further than Starbase Houston, Houston's oldest and largest Trek fan club. Their URL is starbasehouston.org, and they conduct most of their business online. If you want an actual meetup, you'll have to beam up to the USS Zavala, NC100101. The new ship assigned to Starfleet International Region 3, serving Southeast Texas. The next crew muster will be an away mission to get some tacos this Sunday at 1400 hours. Hit USSZavala.org for details on the departure. And since they'll be beaming down to West Belfort, you'll definitely want to leave the red uniform at home. If you think all this Star Trek nonsense is silly, that Kirk was a wimp or that Deep Space Nine was a waste of time, then you're an excellent candidate for the Space City Trade Federation, Houston's official Star Wars fan club. Movie outings, conventions, picnics, parties, and lightsaber duels round out the group's bi-monthly meeting schedule. For details, hit the Jedi Council forums at boards.theforce.net and drill down to the Houston page. We've actually done some lightsaber repair work a few geek gatherings ago. That's off the record, of course, as I'm not union, and I don't want to get Lupulo in trouble. And just to get myself out of trouble, I'd better mention our last group of the night, the Houston Browncoats. Could anyone in the studio guess what show these guys support? Browncoats?
Firefly.
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Yep, the Houston Browncoats are the Houston area Firefly Serenity fan base. If you're not familiar with Firefly, it was just a single-season television series, an American space western, if you will, produced by Joss Whedon. Whedon originally pitched a show as nine people looking into the blackness of space and seeing nine different things. The show explores the lives of some people who fought on the losing side of a civil war, and others who now make a living on the outskirts of society as part of the pioneer culture that exists on the fringes of their star system. In addition, it's a future where only two surviving superpowers, the United States and China, have used to form the central federal government called the Alliance, resulting in the fusion of the two cultures. While it's a very good watch, be prepared for disappointment as the show was not renewed after the first season. There's a movie to make things a little better, but the television version turned out to be the beginnings of a story that would never see an end. And lastly, apologies to any Babylon 5 fans out there. Maybe it's time you pick a real sci-fi franchise. That's that. Sorry, that's going to be some blowback from that. That's that for Talking Shat, and that's it for Barrett Time.
Make sure that gets posted to the site.
I won one.
You won one?
Yep.
Won one what?
One Solitaire game.
Oh, congratulations.
Nice. Thank you.
Can we see the screen?
It's too late.
Oh.
I've started.
I don't believe it. Listen, yeah, yeah, no picks.
Whatever.
Didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Photos or didn't happen.
You go watch Firefly or something.
So there's a show on now on, I think it's on ABC, called Castle, which is a cop show.
It's the guy from Firefly?
It's the guy from Firefly. And he plays a writer who follows around this detective and, you know, helps solve crimes and stuff. But it was really funny. I probably said this to you guys once before, but on one of their Halloween shows, when the camera came to him, he was dressed in the Firefly suit.
That's cool.
And in his outfit, and said, you know, they didn't say what it was. They alluded to it, and it was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek, self-referential thing. It was kind of like when in Boston Legal, when William Shatner talked about, there was one time when his phone rang and it made the communicator noise. Uh-huh. And then something about Klingons. He woke up screaming like, Klingons! I like it when they do that kind of thing. So that William Shatner show performance might be interesting.
I might go check it out. It's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing.
How much are they charging for it?
I looked, and I think it goes somewhere, you know, in the ballpark of 40 for the cheap seats, all the way up to like 80 or 90 for, you know, like orchestra pit kind of.
The gold circle. You get to smell his cologne.
Yeah, some Shatner sweat.
Maybe he'll do Rocket Man.
Or some Esperanto poetry. I'm giving my hope.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight here on Technology Bites. We'll try to get our act together again if we can. Groovehouse, I see somebody's on hold.
We do have a caller on hold.
713-526-5738. All the other lines are open, so when we go to this call.
Yes.
All right, who is it?
All right, up first on the second half of the show, we're going to take Joaquin.
Joaquin, you're on the air.
Okay.
Yes, you're on the air, Joaquin.
Hello.
Yes, this is Joaquin.
Uh-huh.
My question is, I heard about the Google TV
versus Apple TV.
Are you okay? Can you talk to us tonight, Joaquin?
Yes, I'm here, and the question is about what would be best to get Google TV versus Apple TV.
So do you currently subscribe to cable or Dish or anything like that right now?
No, I only have a Wi-Fi connection at home, and I do have Netflix.
Have you researched the offerings from Apple TV and Google TV to see if Google TV, there's not actually any content provided by Google or Apple, right?
Just in terms of YouTube. For Apple, you go through iTunes, so it's anything specific to iTunes. You can also get Netflix through Apple TV.
But you have to buy each episode of every show that you want to see. There's no free content on either of these.
There is Roku, though. I mean, if you're looking for a set-top kind of solution, Roku will let you stream all your Netflix content and a lot of other free content for, you know, like $50-$60.
A lot of cool content.
Yeah, it plugs into your existing Netflix.
R-O-K-U.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the Google TV and the Apple TV is not going to deliver, you know, a lot of free content to you. So you're going to be paying for a lot of the programming that you want to watch using those services.
It's movie rentals and things like that. And I know Flicted does, I think, movie rentals on Apple TV, but they seem a little bit high. Like, they're $5 or $6
for 24
hours. Yeah, I
pretty much only do it when they have the, like, $1 special. Yeah. Like, there's, like, 1 to 3 movies per week that they offer for $1, and that's the only ones I've ever done. The quality's okay, though.
One of the things that if you use the Roku has a lot of different sources, including Amazon. Amazon's video has a lot of the same relatively current movies that Apple TV does, but they're cheaper. It's usually $1 or $2 cheaper. So that's another benefit to getting the Roku. You don't see the Amazon connection, the Amazon app on Google or Apple TV.
Oh, okay, so the Roku is an Amazon, part of the Amazon.
Well, it has that company app, and you can add.
No, it's not part of the Amazon company. Right. Roku and these boxes will deliver content from those providers. You can also get that content brought to your computer as well. They're just devices that allow you to connect to these streaming and subscription services.
I see. Okay.
Does that help at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the process of shopping around and see what is best for our family. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you.
I don't know. I know, Barrett, you've converted to almost all stream.
I'm all streaming at this point.
How much your bandwidth usage like for that?
It's always under 200, which is good. I mean, if I have a lot of stuff going on in the background, I'll run it up to about 150 gigs per month. But that's also streaming HD, you know, quite a bit. I'll forget about it sometimes, and just it'll go for an hour or two without me looking at it.
And what's your hardware of choice for doing this?
Roku, for the most part. I still have one of the old ones, but it's fine. You know, I don't think it does the 1080, but I don't know. I think it might do 720.
Is it the original?
It's the original.
The original only does 720.
Yeah, it's just 720, but I can't tell the difference. But it is really amazing as far as how good streamed content can
man.
Look.
Yes. It's so cool.
Yes.
What are you streaming, Groovehouse?
We've got a older Roku, not the new one, but we stream Netflix, a lot of Netflix.
Is Netflix really HD?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot
it's
of
720.
It can be if it can handle it.
Isn't looks fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like TV. It looks better, you know, as good as TV. So that's really interesting. There's a free thing on there called Crackle. You can also get that online, and they've got, like, classic Seinfeld episodes, stuff like that. Hulu Plus has a lot of recent TV stuff.
The problem, I think, is the how much bandwidth are you using when you do it?
I haven't really
measured it.
Are you using Comcast
as your provider, or Universe, or DSL, or what?
They have a Comcast service, I believe. Yeah, and wireless.
You were saying
the girlfriend uses it.
The girlfriend. Okay, that we.
Them.
Well, I know Cynthia, my wife Cynthia, does not watch TV all day long, or, you know, but what she does watch is she watches a little bit of streaming content on Netflix every night, and then she might stream various episodes of Top Gear throughout the day when she's in the kitchen cooking on Saturday and on Sunday. And our bandwidth is up around 60 to 70 gig just doing that.
That's just a third, though. I mean, does Comcast cap it?
It's 250, yeah. But if we got into some serious streaming, I guess, if I started watching everything via streaming myself, there'd be two rooms. That'd bring it up to 120 easy. So you have to consider that when you're streaming. If you're going to have, especially if a lot of family, if you have people that stay home all day, your bandwidth provider actually supplies you with enough bandwidth to do it. What is your usage up to, Flicted? Do you keep track?
No, I rent, and the person who owns the house pays for it. So I don't know, it's not actually my account. I do know that this last month, I think, he got a warning message that I was in, like, you know, the top. I was exceeding the bandwidth or something, but I'm thinking that's because AT&T's starting to, like, wanting to cap everybody now.
So is this, what was this on, DSL?
Yes,
DSL. Or UVerse?
DSL.
Yeah, DSL has a lower cap. I think it's 150.
Yeah, he had never gotten that warning before, but this last month he got a warning, and I don't know if it was just me or what was causing.
You should have asked him, like, how he changes web habits. Put it back on him.
Yeah, I don't think he does, because it's local to the house I'm in. But it could have been the renter that was behind me at the time. I don't know. So yeah, I can't really see it. So I don't really know. I just know that he got an email that we were going over.
I see. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us here on Technology Bites, we are entertaining your calls.
Groovehouse is entertaining himself.
Groovehouse is still playing solitaire, so you might want to interrupt that if you have the opportunity to call in. Groovehouse, I'll interrupt him right now.
I got to carry this tin over here to this jack real quick. Yes. Yes, how can I help?
What's color tin and what color jack?
It was a red tin on a black jack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to take
The red nine, what do you think? Black nine.
Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question.
All right.
For years, I have put various media on the hard drives I have, and I've stored them, and I've added documents and so forth. But my hard drives don't gain any weight. Why is that?
Data is weightless.
Well, come on now. And when you say, well, you buy a terabyte drive, you'll fill that thing up in no time. You have to fill it up with something.
I'm not sure I understand your question. Do you actually take your hard drive and put it on a scale?
No, obviously.
Are you just going by? Are you just going by feel?
By feel.
By feel? You know, I would challenge you to tell me if you could tell the difference in weight between a hard drive full of data and a hard drive that was completely blank. I mean, there may be a weight difference.
I don't think there's going to be any difference, because it comes down to magnetized sectors on the disk platters, and that's not going to change the weight of anything.
Yeah. It's magnetism.
Yeah, magnetism is mostly just the orientation of the electrons, not so much the actual addition or a subtraction of anything.
Now, back in the day of punch cards, you could tell how much data you had. Not anymore.
Yeah, it's not a matter of putting things on it. It's a matter of changing the state.
Because really, it still has data. It just comes shipped with all zeros first.
That's true. You're right.
And all the data. You're not gaining or losing matter or data. You're just changing.
It's just positively or negatively charging the whatever, so that they read as zeros or ones to give you the data to, you know. Right. Although, like, a record loses weight when music is put on it.
Because you're carving grooves.
You're carving grooves into the vinyl, right. So you're actually losing plastic. But there's not. It's not like when you're putting, you know, stuff on the drive that's going to take up more room or has weight.
It's the same principle as when you record something on cassette tape.
Okay.
It's the same thing. You never added weight to it.
Someone's given me some really heavy tracks in the past, though. I don't know.
Whoa, man.
Iron Butterfly. Yeah.
Now it can occupy, you know, dimensional space. Like, it could be really deep data or deep music or deep thoughts.
Deep house.
Deep house is heavier than
spiritually. And spiritually heavy, certainly.
Just
is
wait for the drop.
A lot of deep things it could be. All right, well, that answers my question. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah. See you later.
Bye. existential, man. Yeah.
Have I heard back in the day, like, the card sharks, and actually, I guess modern-day card sharks can tell, like, the difference between, like, a face card and, like, a number card by the amount of ink printed on the card. So, I mean, you know, that's kind of a random kind of tangential thing, but...
Okay.
You can pick up some things and tell what it is.
I think that's true. I certainly was pretty good at telling what might be in a Christmas present box. At least what it could be. You know, you could always tell if it was a clothes or a toy. Back, at least when I was a kid, toys had some weight. They weighed more than a sweater.
Yeah, don't shake your hard drive to figure out what's on it. It's a bad move.
Well, I guess it also depends on whether it's your content or content you've stolen from somebody, because that stolen content can kind of be a little heavy burden.
It's one of those things. I mean, there is a pretty big disconnect now between how things actually work. You know, so I think a lot of people, you know, kind of carry on common sense into electronics, and it doesn't always
well it's like the whole idea of thinking that your computer has worn out, and really the computer hardware might just be just fine, but the software needs to be refreshed, or the data becomes corrupted, or you get so much bloat into your software that the computer starts performing poorly. But if you reload the software from, you know, if people say, well, this computer's getting old and slow, I need a new one. Maybe not. If you were to take your computer that was 3 to 5 years old and back up your files and then reload the operating system all fresh and your apps fresh, that computer would seem like it was brand new again. You would notice a difference almost every time. I've noticed that with my computer, because you get used to them slowing down because the software's not as responsive as it was when it was first loaded on the computer. And when you have a fresh load, the computer seems much snappier, unless it's actually broken. Like if you have bad memory or a bad processor or your hard drive's going, that is kind of breaking down. But for the most part, when people are talking about their computer's old and slow, it's just because the software's bad.
Although sometimes it's still just that the pixies and sprites that are inside there working everything get tired.
And go to sleep. Take a little nap.
That gerbil doesn't run around the wheel as fast as he used to. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to take Ben.
Ben, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Awesome. Hey guys. I went to the first geek gathering last time for the first time, and you guys were really inclusive. I recommend everybody go.
Nice.
Well, thanks.
My question is, I just cut the cable, cut to cable TV, and sorry, I'm getting a little bit of an echo.
That's probably because you either have a bad cell phone or you got your radio turned up.
Probably bad cell phone. I turn my radio definitely down.
Okay, definitely down.
So it's probably on my end, I'm sure. But either way, I'm going to try to get it out, and I'll just take it offline or something. What I would really like to get is the current TV network streamed somehow. I love TYT, the Young Turks show, and I'd really like to see that show on the current network, but I don't have cable anymore. I'm doing it all over the internet, totally legally. I want to do everything legal, of course. But
does Current TV offer their content on iTunes?
Is there a Roku channel for Current TV, Groovehouse? Do you know?
I don't recall. I'm not sure.
There is.
I want to say there is, and my internet connection just died.
My internet connection is dying. There,
I've never had internet connection. I'm playing Solitaire.
Well, then I'll check it out. Do you think Roku might have it?
Yeah, Google for Roku. I want to say, like, Roku set up where it's got a lot of different channels, and I want to say Current TV. I want to say I saw that. I could be totally wrong on here. Oh, yeah, for Roku box owners, you can watch Current TV. It finally came up. So, yeah, it's a channel.
So, I'm sorry, what is Roku again?
So, it's a Linux-based set-top box. It's maybe 4 inches by 4 inches by a couple inches tall.
Okay.
It goes for anywhere from $99 for the top-of-the-line one all the way down to, you know, $49 for some of the older ones.
Okay.
And what it does is it streams. It was initially made to stream Netflix Watch It Now content.
Uh-huh.
So that was like the first app that it had, and they've done is they've opened it up to different developers. So if you have a channel like Amazon, like Dwight said earlier, Amazon has come in and you can do like Amazon Video rentals, or like TechCrunch, a lot of different things. Like Twit has a Roku channel.
Yeah, Twit TV.
Yeah, all these different things. You can go to Roku.com, and actually you can do it online now. You can select all these different channels, and then when you flip through there, there'll be different content. So, you know, like you can go in and watch your Netflix queue, you can watch whatever you rent on Amazon, or you can go like to Twit TV and watch, you know, whatever Leo Laporte stuff you want to watch. you know,
so it is, ones with my so it is a hardware solution. Like, I'm pretty familiar with Linux and, like, Boxy and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just like that. It's Linux. And actually, the cool part with this is I lose my remote for my Roku all the time. You can actually Telnet into the Roku player and issue it commands and change channels.
Really?
And stuff like that. Yeah,
that's
yeah. Awesome. Telnet port 80. That's what I've been doing for the last 9 months, sadly. And also,
you lost your remote.
Yeah, I lost my remote. The cool thing is because it's got the Telnet application, if you want to do a web front end. Yeah, you can do a web front end, or they're like Android applications that actually let you control the Roku from the phone, because all it's doing is doing a Telnet connection into the IP address, you know, that it grabs off the DHCP server. So it's pretty fun.
Well, cool. I'll look into buying one of those.
Google search, too, to see if Current offers their, if there's an app for streaming Current TV. You should be able to Google search that pretty quick. Our internet just cratered.
Yeah, I did. I found, I find clips, you know. They like to break their content into clips, you know. But I just was looking to just get a live stream, just, you know, so I could have it on, like, all the time during the day when I'm working from home.
Well, there is another way, you know, there's Slingbox, too. Doesn't that allow you
with
to?
With that, you've got to have the service.
You could talk to somebody else who has the service.
You could try.
I've thought about that.
Like, hey, you know what? I'm going to install this thing. It's going to enhance your internet experience.
But you can only watch one channel all day.
We had some friends in the wireless group that did that, because they didn't have, no one had, I guess, internet, more or less. I'm sorry, no one had a cable connection, so they would do that, and there were actually times when they would get into channel fights because they both wanted to watch something at the same time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll be getting it from my brother in Columbus, Ohio, so I'll be getting Columbus local station.
Just go visit him and install it on the DL. Don't tell him.
Free cable. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All
great
right,
show.
Thanks for your call.
I'll see you next Geek Gathering.
Awesome, thanks. All right.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, that last Geek Gathering was pretty all right. We had a good time. What?
It was very nice. And we already have the invitation out for the next one.
Yes, we do. I was so enthused about the last. The last two were particularly good. So I'm hoping that we'll stay on a roll and have another good one, and maybe Groovehouse will actually come to this one. Although, Flickton, are you asleep?
No, I'm playing solitaire.
Oh, you too. But you've got internet.
Have you talked to Jack Potts about our picture?
No, but if you don't keep talking to him, you may never see it. He's got a lot of, you know, irons in the fire.
I got this. I'm playing with this new Inspiron 14Z notebook computer, and it's Windows 7. And I forgot there's solitaire on here, so maybe I'll play a little solitaire.
Man, I thought I was going to be the only one.
Hey, Groovehouse, is there like social solitaire? Can you play like solitaire against somebody?
I ain't got no internet connection.
Take it online.
Jen!
Oh.
Jen. Can you set up an ad hoc network?
I can telnet into my solitaire game.
Solitaire with friends.
Through my Roku box.
All right, well, we got no calls in the queue, so we just have to amuse ourselves by playing solitaire on
the
air.
What's the phone number?
Why don't you tell me?
713-526-5738.
All right, Barrett.
Yay. With a smile.
Only
said
10
it with
years,
a smile.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're welcome to throw the number out there, Barrett. You're, you know, we're not worried that you're going to break the phone. At least not the station phone. Yuck, yuck. 713-526-5738. So you had a horror story. You dropped your phone.
Yeah, Jay Lee actually saw me on the street
that's funny. I actually rolled up on Barrett and was wondering why he was looking at his phone all puzzled. He was walking across the street over on San Felipe. Well, actually, on San Felipe. Yeah. And he had just dropped his Nexus phone. I honked at him. He thought I was making fun of
him. Yeah, I dropped my phone. It's like insult to injury. Some guy's honking at me, pointing at me. I'm like, okay, I know I dropped my phone. And then I looked down. I noticed I saw Cynthia first. And
right.
I realized, oh, I know those people. That's cool. But at first, I was like, don't mock my pain. That's so not cool.
But the good news is that you got the insurance on the phone.
Yeah, and I called up and I said, hey, I dropped my phone. Is it covered? And they said, yes. So hopefully tomorrow I'll get an uncracked Nexus Galaxy.
And who did you call? It was Verizon?
Verizon, yeah.
Huh. And
now,
so you,
we'll actually see if they give me the phone, but the person that I spoke to, you know, at the National Center said, yeah, I can get a new phone.
So, do all their phones come with insurance, or is
that? You have to buy the insurance.
Like $5 or $6 a month.
Yeah, I did it through T-Mobile when I got my phone at first, because I kind of got paranoid because it was my first really good smartphone, so I bought the insurance in case they dropped it and cracked the screen or something. As it turns out, your phone actually has a drawback, because I think if I drop my phone in the same way you dropped yours, it would be fine. Your phone has some meat to it. It has some weight.
I mean, Yeah, it landed buttered side down on this one for sure.
It Murphy'd all the way to the concrete, but you know, my phone's so light, I think I could, you know, unless I just dropped it on the edge or something, it'd probably be fine.
Apple has never, until recently, had insurance on the iPhone, and they just started doing that.
So does that cover water damage and everything? Or
I don't know. I haven't looked into it because they won't. You can't bring your like old iPhone 4 in and say, can I get it on this? Yeah, you only can get it when you buy a new phone. So when I buy the iPhone 5 later this year, which I'm going to do, I'll get it then probably.
Wow, my battery on my phone is so dead, it won't let me use the mobile hotspot. So I was hoping to get some internet because I am not playing solitaire.
Come on.
I can share mine out if you need something.
Can you?
Yeah.
Give me some internet, Barrett.
Just no videos.
I'm going to be downloading.
No kitty cat videos.
Did you see that for Afflicted, I sent out a Nyan cat, Kermit the Frog Nyan cat?
I did see that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome. It was the Kermit the Frog doing the yay dance. Doing Nyan, Nyan, Nyan. All right, so Groovehouse?
Yes.
We have multiple calls. At
yes, we do. If you're calling in, keep calling.
713-526-5738. Who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Terry.
Terry, you're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What can we do for you?
Okay. I have a Toshiba laptop PC, and it has an SATA disk in it, 4 gigabytes. And one day the batteries just ran down, and it died. And when I powered it back up, my disk drive was gone. And gone in the way that it just wouldn't boot up again. So I took it out, and I plugged it in separately into another computer, and it spins and everything, but it's like the, I don't know if it's file allocation tables or whatever's in there, has gotten corrupted. I think the files and the data is still there, but I can't find any tool or anything that will let me see the disk, the data that might be still there.
There are disk recovery tools that will look at the drive to see if it can read data and recover, you know, if it's like if there's a corruption in the file allocation table or something like that. These data recovery software programs are pretty good about letting you get that data back. The good news on those programs is that they usually will give you a free version to try, and it will tell you if it can see the files or not. And then if it can, then you have to pay to register the software to be able to do the recovery.
Yeah, that's good.
So I don't have... I use one. The one that I used recently was from EASUS, EASEUS.
Yeah.
And if you Google search EASUS data recovery or EASUS file recovery, you'll find their application. Now, I believe OnTrack also offers a tool that they'll let you use to scan your drive, and you could pay for it. There's literally dozens of them.
Oh, okay.
So what I would do is I'd take the drive and put it into an external enclosure or whatever and hook it up to a system and load the software on the system and have it scan that drive and see if it can find your data or not.
Okay, that's kind of what I tried to do, and then I bought a thing called Easy Connect, which is a USB to IDE and SATA and all the different. I wasn't able to see anything using that, but I will try these utilities.
What was the software you used?
I just
plugged it in?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to actually use a recovery program to see if it can read the corrupted data, or if it can.
Okay. Yeah, I tried Norton Ghost, and it didn't seem to see it.
No, I don't think Norton Ghost is not a recovery for recovering corrupted data. All it's used for is to replicate data.
Okay. So if the recovery things in the Windows environment doesn't work, would it be worth trying Ubuntu or Linux or something to see it?
Probably not, because these file recovery softwares are very good if the data is there at all, especially if it was previously Windows data for seeing it. I mean, you could try, but the Ubuntu stuff doesn't necessarily deal with corrupted Windows file tables as well. There might be a Ubuntu tool that does that. I mean, I just used one that was Linux-based to recover data from an Apple on my Apple computer from an SD card. But I would just go, I would start with one of the free solutions, see what happens. And then if, yeah, I mean, it depends on how important the data is to you, what you're going to try. I mean, try everything.
Right. No, it's not like it's not recreatable, but it's going to take a long time to re-enter it all. So.
Right. Well, that'll teach you to
yeah,
back
right.
it up.
Okay. Thank all you.
Right. Thanks for your call. Bye.
Bye.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. We got about 20 minutes left in the show, 25 minutes. I see members only is holding.
That's correct.
So she wants to talk something about phone insurance.
She sure does. Here we go, members right. only.
Hi, members only.
Hey. I can't believe it, but I may be calling with the tables turned this time.
Hey!
Who dropped their phone? Rufus?
No. Barrett.
Barrett, sorry. Well, Barrett, have you ever done this insurance with a phone before?
Have
you
ever done what?
I think I need to... Have you ever replaced your phone with the phone insurance before?
This is the first time. We're waiting to hear.
Yeah, I've never done this before. I mean, I've broken many a phone. What's that?
I don't think you want to do this. I think you'd rather have a cracked screen.
Why is that?
Because I also have a Galaxy, and being members only, I tend to lose them and get them stolen and drop them in broth and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And butter sauce actually was the last time. And so they replace the phone all the time, except they say it's a new phone, and it's not. You always, always, always get a refurbished phone.
Well, the good news is this phone is so new, it's only been out for 2 months. Maybe they won't have a big stock of refurbs. So
that's
we'll see.
What happened the first time they gave me my Galaxy, and I've never had a working one yet, and you finally get sick of replacing them because...
Well, let me say this about the Galaxy phone, is that phone, I've got the Galaxy S, I've got the Samsung Vibrant Galaxy S, and it is a flawed piece of hardware. It is
okay,
a flawed piece of hardware. There are so many of them with bad GPSs and so forth. And they did not get that phone right. And I didn't pursue it hard enough while I was still under warranty. So I'm not surprised to hear that you had that situation happen.
3 or 4 times with the same phone.
Yeah, but if you see the sadness, I mean, Barrett, I think Barrett would prefer having a non-working phone that looked good.
I see.
Than having a working phone that looked like this.
I feel kind of ghetto. Like, I've not been checking my email in public because it just looks, you know.
Oh,
it's a sadness. So, I think Barrett, you know, because Barrett could pretend like the phone's working and doing what it needs to do, but he's not going to whip this cracked...
And you have a case on it, right?
I had a case on it. Well, I didn't have the front case on it, so it fell out. And
but okay. To be fair,
I understood the full ramifications.
Right? I think your point is interesting and well taken. It needs to be considered that yes, when you do swap stuff out, you'll oftentimes get a refurb, and it may have had a problem, but. You can always keep going back until they wear you down and you give up. But to be fair, Barrett with an unflawed piece of technology is kind of an odd thing.
I like some character, but not totally out of the game.
I mean, his MacBook Air looks like it's still pretty unblemished, which is, I guess I probably
it's the aluminum it. Body, really. It's more indestructible than
but
other
people. But on your previous MacBook, you couldn't keep all the keys
on it. Yeah, I've killed almost every piece of hardware I had except for this last... laptop. And the O key was an issue.
Yeah, I'd say that Barrett needs a phone made by Jeep, but I saw what it was like when he had an actual
Jeep.
I'm just hard on hardware.
Poor Barrett. Okay, I get the magnitude of the problem now. Silly me.
Okay, no, I'm just glad you can see, you have to see past your own experience and understand and appreciate the unique situation that Barrett's in.
Most definitely. He is a highly special individual.
Special is right.
Okay, guys, love y'all. Bye.
All right, bye. Thanks for your call. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number if you want to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT. I see Groovehouse is currently screening a call.
I was smiling. There's a movie coming out in 2012. I think.
Oh, it's Abraham Lincoln, yes. Vampire Hunter.
The book was pretty good.
Oh, really? So this
Tim
is for
Burton
real?
Is
yes.
It.
Yes. Okay. I read the book. The book is quite good.
It's
I
mean,
for
real,
it's... For real, in that it really exists, not for real, yes. In that it really happened.
Well, But let's just say that that's out. We don't really know.
It's no kind of knows. Like, you know, there was the Jane Austen Sense and Sensibility and Zombies, and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And this is a little bit, this is better than that. This is actually takes Abraham Lincoln and makes him a vampire killer. The whole idea of slavery in the South was because they were vampires who were bringing food over from Africa to feed on. And so that's why Abraham Lincoln hated slavery, because he was a vampire.
He hated vampires.
He hated vampires.
It was because vampires killed his mother or something.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. It's a really interesting book. And if, you know, you first start reading a lot of these, like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies was like one joke repeated over and over and over again. But this is actually a story, and it's
quite
Speaking
of zombies, did you see the...
Walking Dead's back.
Yes.
Walking
Dead. Yeah,
I did watch that.
Yes, I loved The Walking Dead. I loved... Can we do a spoiler?
Wait a minute.
It's a small spoiler. It doesn't have much to do with the plot.
No, we will not reveal any spoilers.
Okay, all right.
Based on your ideology alone.
Based on the fact that even when a spoiler's not coming, you go,
raise your hands in the air and you flail them about.
You wave your hands around like you don't care. No,
spoilers.
No, go ahead. I want to have it on record that Dwight spoiled.
This is not that. It's not the biggest one. The thing.
Do you watch Walking Dead? Do you even care?
Nothing. No.
Okay, never. Don't worry about it.
The scene in which they leave, almost leaves the arm behind on the ground as they're driving.
That's not a spoiler.
No. But that was just kind of like the quintessential Walking Dead scene.
They did such an amazing job with that prosthetic arm. Like it looked.
It was very telling for that character to go, wait a minute, and jump out of the truck.
Yeah, jump out and get the arm.
Because you're watching it. In most movies or shows of that genre, you would expect her to jump out of the truck, go get the arm, and then something horrible would happen. Like the arm would come to life or another zombie would leap out of the
truck. She was just cleaning up.
It was just like, oh, God, okay, stop for a second. I got to get this, you know, because the debris of zombies has become such a commonplace thing for them now.
Right.
Yeah, very good. I like that episode. Although I don't, I'm happy with how it ended, but kind of unhappy with how, I mean, they summed it up and then they didn't sum it up.
They left some things. There are a lot of things.
I was glad that they did what they did in the bar.
Yeah.
I was watching Talking Dead.
Huh?
Talking Dead, yeah. Which is the talk show that comes on after. They had Dave Navarro on there and one of the guys who's a producer of The Walking Dead. And so they were talking about the fact, I didn't know who this guy was, but one of the guys that comes into the bar that's from Philadelphia, I guess he's like a pretty well-known actor. And so they were saying like what happened was intentional, what happened with this character, because everybody was like, ooh, new guy. He's going to be like, you know, an important character in the.
And then they kill him off. Yeah.
What's See, I wasn't going to say that because that's a spoiler.
Oh, no, that is a spoiler. Wow.
The funniest thing about The Walking Dead, we have my wife's 95-year-old mother-in-law who, if she doesn't like a show, starts looking at her watch and going, is it time for bed yet? But with The Walking Dead,
real subtle.
She is rapt. She never looks at her watch. She doesn't take her eyes off the screen.
She's probably too scared to do anything.
She thinks it's the news.
She never wants to go to bed.
She loves The Walking Dead. When it came on, I said, Hilda, your favorite show is on. It's the zombies. She goes, what? Zombies? What? And then she just kept, she loved it.
We just got her KPFT membership, didn't we? The last fun drive. Didn't we?
No, we never did.
Oh, we didn't. Okay.
Never did.
Okay. We got a call. We got a couple calls.
Now, I didn't pay attention to the spoiler that you gave out, but...
I did. I was bad. I was very bad.
Was he killed in this last episode?
Who?
Who? What? I cannot believe that people die in that show. They're either already dead or they just live forever.
You know, okay, this is kind of spoiler.
What was the character? What was the actor's name?
Exactly.
What was the actor's name?
I don't remember. But they were saying he'd been in a few movies. He's kind of an action actor. He kind of looks like Mark Wahlberg to me. Plus, he was doing a Philly accent, so he sounded kind of like Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Not Fat Tony.
Not the fat one. Yeah,
Scrawny Tony or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
But the other guy.
Yeah.
That went behind the bar to get the drink.
Right.
Yeah, that was him. Evidently, he's a fairly well-known actor who's been in.
I thought it was going to be a recurring character, and that's why I kind of, but I just like, but you know you're about to get jumped.
The comic book, that happens all the time in the comic book series. I mean, that's part of the comic book series is you never know what even main characters are going to die. I mean, they'll introduce somebody in one episode and they're dead. They'll have somebody that was in like six episodes of the comic book and suddenly he's just dead. Like, it's not, there's no buildup. It's just like, suddenly he's dead. He died. A zombie got him or somebody shot him or whatever.
I like it when shows are willing to do that. Now, I've been watching, we're going to take a call here in a bit, but speaking of TV shows, I've been watching Alcatraz. And I kind of like it, but I don't know how far they can go with it. It has the potential to be another Lost. I mean, obviously it's directed by the same people, and the obviously they hired the same fiddle players or the violin players because it goes. But I'm actually kind of liking it. I recorded a whole bunch of episodes, so I'm not like waiting week to week to watch them. So I've been watched like four in a row. And I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like it.
Yeah. Well, let's say this is a little spoilery, but I don't know if y'all noticed this, but, you know, when the... This already played, right? This is from the first half of this season, when all the zombies came out and up and to get her and...
Then she almost...
And then,
yeah.
You know, they had to kill... Then she got sick, right? She's exhibiting all the symptoms of somebody who...
Who's going to be a zombie.
Who's gotten bitten. Except... She never had any bite marks or anything that were visible.
Yeah, so we're thinking it's mutating into an airborne.
So is it possible? Yeah, that there's now an airborne variant.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw that she's demonstrating all the symptoms. She didn't get bit. They're going to introduce us into the airborne version of this.
Which after I thought that, I'm like, so who's been around her? And I noticed like in the show that like basically it was all people who lived on the farm. That were surrounding her most of the time. So those people might end up being infected.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yeah.
Who do we have up next?
All right. Up next, we are going to take John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I just wanted to reply to the guy who was asking about recovering data from his hard drive. And I want to say that people I've talked to in that situation, more often than not, what they're missing is pictures. Really critical data, and more general file recovery utilities often don't pick up on like a hard disk that is spinning up but won't mount. But if you're going for a utility that's specifically for recovering pictures, more often than not you can find something that will scrape those family photos back off the hard disk. And while there are many, you know, services that will recover, you know, hard drives that are just not spinning up at all and they're very expensive and all of that, you can go that route. But since that guy had a disk that would spin up and it would, you know, register on his USB adapter, that finding utility specifically for recovering pictures from, for example, SD cards, right, when a hard disk is really no different than most SD cards.
That's
maybe
not true.
If there's a specific kind of thing he wants to recover, he might find a utility that does that.
Yeah, but I mean, a hard drive has to spin up for you to be able to recover the data from it, unlike an SD card.
That's so true, but he was saying that his hard disk was spinning up, right?
Yeah,
there's a chance there. Well, so not all hope is lost.
Well, no, I agree. I think there's hope, and I think one of the basic data recovery softwares is going to do that for him. You know, all these, they're designed to just look and see if there's a corruption. Because, like I said, I had it with an SD card, and I've seen it with hard drives. The file allocation table gets corrupted. Try to mount the drive. You can't see the data, but these recovery programs, and there are dozens of them. Some of them are marketed as image recovery, and others are just total data recovery. Same basic technology that's going to do that for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. But, you know, if before he, like, gives up, I just wanted to say, you know, if there's a specific thing that he was looking for, and pictures is more often than not what people really want back off their failed hard disks.
Yeah, don't give up.
That would be something to try.
Never surrender.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I wanted to throw in because that saved me more often than not.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Cool. Bye. Thanks.
All right. 713, maybe 526-5738, possibly. We got 10 minutes left.
Yeah, maybe.
Got a couple of calls in the queue,
yeah,
so could go either way. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right, up next, we're going to take Bill.
Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Go either way. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
Wow. Turn down your radio.
Got to listen to the phone, not to the radio.
He's waiting for us to be on that. Okay, this is Bill, and if he ever turns down his radio and goes with the phone, he'll be on the air.
Hey, hello.
Hey.
Sorry, I was a little late there. I had a question. I heard y'all talking about the Galaxy S phone and how it was having problems. I'm looking at maybe upgrading to the Galaxy S2 on T-Mobile, and I was wondering if y'all knew if that was a good phone or if y'all had experience with that.
I haven't had experience with the Galaxy S2. That's the 4G version of the Galaxy S. It's the newer one. I have not been doing a lot of research on the new offerings on Android phones. What have you heard about this phone, if anything, Dwight?
I've played with one, and it's
a battery suck. Isn't it?
It is a battery suck, as a lot of 4G phones are. It's also not that much of an advancement over the Galaxy S. I mean, I didn't think so.
But they may have worked the bugs out,
right?
At least the hardware bugs that the Galaxy S had.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it's not the, it's not that great a leap beyond the Galaxy S. What are you looking for in a new phone?
Well, I was really wanting to get a bigger screen, and I like the size of that screen, and I heard about the Galaxy Note that's coming to AT&T. I'd really like to get that, but in the near future, anyway, it doesn't look like it's going to come to T-Mobile. I was maybe going to wait and see if it might, because that looks like a really cool phone. The screen, so I really like to get a screen size that's like 5 inches that would fit in your pocket, and it looks like the Galaxy Note would do that. Have you heard anything about that?
The Galaxy Note, it isn't out yet. It looks like a pretty nice phone. You can use a stylus with it to actually take notes.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much interest you'd have at that. Are you interested in Verizon phones at all?
Well, you know, T-Mobile has really the best price as far as unlimited everything, and versus Verizon and AT&T, it's a lot more expensive, I think. But go ahead.
Well, because Verizon has some really interesting phones, including the Motorola Droid Razr and the Droid Razr Max, both of which have really good size screens. The Razr Max has decent battery life. It's an LTE phone. LTE is much faster than the HSPA Plus on T-Mobile. But, you know, if you want to make sure you get one that has decent battery life, the Razr, not so much. The Razr Max has really good battery life. And the screens are really nice and big.
Okay. So the Razr Max is better battery.
Better battery and a nicer screen.
Okay. I heard y'all talking earlier, too, about a while back I ran across this thing that was like a dumb pad, like a 10-inch iPad, but it was just a shell where you would drop in your cell phone.
Your BlackBerry.
Are they out now? Can you get one of those?
No, I don't think so, unless you're talking about the Motorola
Atrix. Oh, you're talking about the thing I was making up?
Well, maybe you were making it up, Jay, but I actually saw a company on the internet that was developing it. I don't know if it's out yet, but they had some prototypes where you drop your cell phone in the top of it, and it would contact your HDMI and go, you know, it would power the screen, have a touch screen, and that way you're only paying one data fee. That's the problem I have with pads.
Yeah,
you know, pads
put that out.
Pay another friggin' 3G price.
Dwight, you had one at the Geek Gathering, didn't you?
Yeah.
I had the Motorola Atrix.
I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, the Motorola Atrix, which is
in and make it like a laptop.
Right. Right.
Right.
Oh, really? So that's available now?
It's called the Motorola Atrix. It's on AT&T, and I think they're about to come out with the Motorola Atrix 2.
Motorola Atrix 4G dual-core phone they have that are listed on their site.
Yeah, although it's 4G as in AT&T's HSPA Plus, which is terrible.
Uh-oh.
It's
not
terrible.
A bad-looking phone, at least the pictures of it.
Yeah, it's a decent phone, but if it's on the AT&T HSPA Plus network, particularly in Houston, it may actually be worse in Houston than other places, but it's really every HSPA Plus AT&T phone I've tried has been slower than the 3G phones that AT&T has.
Man,
Is that true for T-Mobile, too?
No. No, T-Mobile's is a much better implementation. You know, the faster thing you could get is LTE, which is available on AT&T and Verizon.
Uh-huh. So the Atrix, is that a pad size, or is it just...
It is a notebook computer. It opens up like a notebook computer. You put your Atrix phone in it.
Okay.
And it works just like a notebook computer. But it runs off the phone.
Okay. So y'all haven't seen a pad that does that besides that?
I have not seen a pad, but Jay was dreaming of one.
Yeah, I thought there should be something that allows you to plug your phone into a thing that turns it into a tablet.
Yeah, there's a company out there doing it. I haven't checked up on it in several months, but it's like genius, you know? Why not? Anyway, that's all I had, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Bye. All right. So we got time for one more.
Mm-hmm. Last one, probably for the show. We're going to take Gene.
Gene, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. Yes. Y'all were talking earlier about the indestructibility of phones, and as luck would have it, a couple months ago, I got tired of dropping my Motorola flip phone on the floor and the battery falling out. The back case falls off. You know, the battery goes flying across the room, and it would take forever to get the thing back online. It's getting kind of scary. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm just going to break this thing. It's going to be over with. I took one of those plastic, hard plastic cases that, you clip on your belt and all this. Well, it needed to be completely modified. I used a Dremel tool, ate out the little holes for, you know, where you plug it in. You know, you got the headset thing and the little buttons to control everything. I redid all of that. I used Velcro. I used putty, all kind of stuff. This thing is indestructible. I dropped it from a ladder 10 feet high. Nothing happened to it. It was wonderful.
Is the phone still usable? Is it so, like, puttied padded out that you've got to, like, unpack it to talk on?
I'm using it right now.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I do some weird stuff, admittedly. I make some weird things. This is one of the weirdest ones ever made. Now, the phone can be removed from the case, but it's got to be peeled away from Velcro and stuff like that. But largely, it just stays in the case at all times.
See, you know, if you're going to go that far with a phone, I would get one of those old-timey 80s cell phones and put my phone inside of that.
That'd be great.
You're talking about, okay, it's the new brick for iPhone. It's made from actual concrete.
We need to have a phone drop contest, like the old egg drop contest in the 50s. Let's do a phone drop contest.
I'll put mine up against it, you know?
All right. Winner gets an iPhone.
All righty. Okay, that's all I wanted to say, and I'm really enjoying the show.
Well, I appreciate your call. Thanks for your call.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for it. That's great. What a good show. So, I mean, obviously, it's going to be great because it's not a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. That automatically makes it full of win.
And we had phones.
We had phones at work. Groovehouse wasn't distracted by any pesky internets.
I won one game of solitaire.
He beat himself. Flicked was kind of absent. Sort of. Where'd Pete go? I hadn't heard him chime in a while.
Oh, you know what?
It's the internet.
Probably oh, you just killed the internet.
I killed Peter Hughes.
Wow. Alright, sorry, Pete. He doesn't get to say goodbye.
Mm-mm.
If you call in real quick.
Dwight Badger don't care. Dwight Badger don't give an Atrix.
Silver Badger.
Good Lord. All right, well, it was a good vampire show while it lasted. All right, well, we're going to get out of here. Yay, outro music.
Zombies.
All right, well, you have been listening to Technology Bites.
Yes.
And we'll be back next Wednesday for more Technology Bites here on KPFT. And check your local listings if you're listening outside of the KPFT broadcast area. Anyway, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
And Pete, we're sorry we cut Pete off, but Dwight controlled the internet tonight and he turned it off.
Thoughtlessly.
Thoughtlessly, like he's prone to do. Pick up that arm that fell off the truck. All right, see you next time.
There are places you go to get the quick news. You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touch our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations. You need a choice.
And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more. People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.